One of the really fun things about being a Minnesotan in November is all of the philanthropy moves that we get to do through a really fun day called Give to the Max. It's the great Minnesota Give Together. This year, it's November 14th, and it's a great opportunity for so many Minnesota charities to raise a lot of funds. There are ticket prizes, there are charity matches, there are grant funds. It's like a huge fun day, culminating all on November 14th. But listen, the best news of all is Emerge Mothers Academy has a $1,000 match this year, and it can be pre-pledged anytime November 1st until the day of November 14th when all the giving pools in. So will you be a part of it and help us unlock that match, $1,000? Give 10, give 20, give 1,000, and we will release that other $1,000. Double your gift, givemn.org. On November 14th. Emerge Mothers Academy is always thrilled to have you along for this exciting ride. At the end of the year, fourth quarter, it's not just like fourth quarter for a charity, but fourth quarter because it's so much fun. First, thank you for those who came or donated to the 8th annual Splurge for Emerge Gala. Super fun at the machine shop. We raised over $50,000 and we are working our way toward our goal of $60,000. Most of that was pledged, so we're just waiting for it to trickle in. So exciting! Also coming up, we are doing Thanksgiving meals for 75 of our families with Minnesota Timberwolves player Robert Covington. So that's exciting in November. And in December, we will have our annual Christmas boutique where you can shop for kids and give those gifts on behalf of that mom. And during the boutique itself on December 13th, you can even come and serve cocoa, cookies, and help wrap those gifts as mama picks them out to be able to give her kids some stress-free financial relief as she gives sweet gifts to her kids. So we hope you'll keep on keeping on with Emerge Mothers Academy, and we love all the ways that you support this incredible group of women. Okay, guys, as always, thanks for being a part of the To Emerge podcast. These are stories of women, mothers, and enterprises filled with grit, gumption, and overcoming. Where in the midst of adversity, we see her rise up. She makes a choice. She chooses to emerge. I'm your host, Becca Erickson.
Hey, everybody. So excited you've tuned in for this week's episode of the To Emerge podcast. I'm actually on with a fellow podcaster, but she spent most of her time building up military career, some government work, federal employee, of course, you know, we'll get into all that, but now spending time as a personal life and business coach. So I do welcome to the show, Emily Harmon. Thank you, Emily.
I'm excited to be here.
We just love getting to celebrate women. And I'm actually thrilled being married to a Marine veteran myself. I'm thrilled to talk to a female naval officer. Will you get into a little bit of your story in the military and then working for government?
Okay. Basically, I ended up going into the military kind of, I guess I would say, because of basketball. Because when I was in high school, I was a really good basketball player. My dad had never served in the military because he had had an injury. And I grew up in Northern Virginia, kind of around a military environment. And I played basketball. I was good at it. And I was recruited by lots of different colleges to go to school. One of them was West Point, and I went up there. It was cold and rainy and gray, and everyone was wearing gray. So I went to the Naval Academy, which was closer to home, and I spent the weekend there. It was nice and sunny, and I liked the team, and I thought, I'm going to go here. I didn't really know too much about the military, but one of my focuses was that I wanted to be more focused on academics and not as much sports, because I knew I wouldn't be like playing professional basketball. So I thought, if I ever get hurt, I want to not lose a scholarship or something like that. So, and that did end up happening. I tore the anterior cruciate in my knee my freshman year and then also my senior year. So that was pretty tough. And, but I did end up graduating. I was in the sixth class of women to graduate. So I would say that was, there were a lot of obstacles to overcome there, being, you know, in the extreme minority. There was like, out of over 1,000 people in my class, there's about 72, I think, women to graduate. So that's about how many it was. Now there's over, like, I think over 200 in each class that graduates. But
sure.
So I did that, and I served on active duty for 7 years in the Navy on a ship and on shore duty. And then I ended up getting out of the Navy, working for the Navy full-time as a military officer, and became a federal employee. And I was also in the Navy Reserves. And then I just retired from working for the Navy as a civilian in May. And then that's when I started my podcast and my coaching and consulting business.
Good for you. So when you're reserve, I mean, can you be career then? Did you do 20 or more years?
Yes, I did. I did 7 years active duty and then 13 reserves. So when I turn 60, I get my reserve retirement. Yes. And now I'm getting my civilian retirement as well. I was able to retire at age 56. So not bad.
Yeah. Good for you. So did all of this kind of lead to coaching, or were people asking you, like, you know so much about life, will you be my mentor? Or how did all this develop now?
Well, actually, when I retired, I didn't even call it a retirement. I had the ceremony at the Pentagon. I called it a graduation because I looked at it as I'm graduating onto bigger and better things. I'm only 56, so there's a lot of things I can do and things that I want to do. And when I was served in the military and as a civilian, I did coach a lot of people, men, but mostly women. And I like coaching them, being a mentor, helping them through. I've been through lots of challenging times in my life, so I can feel like I can coach in a lot of different areas. So I liked doing that. So that's why I started a coaching business. And then my podcast is similar to yours. It's not focused just on women, but it's I just interviewed people that I know, everyday people, on how they overcame an adversity in their lives. So I like doing that and giving a voice to people, letting them tell their story, and others can learn from that. Somebody posted on our Facebook group recently that your hard time, your story can be somebody else's guidebook in the future. And so by sharing the stories, I think we're helping other people. And then when I retired, my last job was the senior advisor to the Secretary of the Navy on providing opportunities for small businesses to participate in government contracting. So that's why I do consulting. I'm asked a lot to help small businesses figure out how to navigate the Navy and the Marine Corps and how to sell their products or services to the Navy and the Marine Corps. And it's really hard for small businesses to compete against the Boeings and the Lockheeds and, you know, these big companies. And a lot of times, you know, the small businesses are, you know, very entrepreneurial, very innovative, and they have solutions that the warfighters need, but they just don't always know how to navigate the system. So I like helping them with that. So I do that too.
Wow, that's awesome. You and I both have a love of story, right? And sharing stories and hearing about other people who are resilient and they have grit. So it's fun to just kind of share the camaraderie. Will you go into some of the pieces of your life where you really had to find a new version of yourself to overcome adversity, a couple of your trials?
A couple of my trials are when, you know, just hurting my knee. That was so devastating because basketball, I had worked so hard at basketball in high school and it was really my life. I mean, I did that a lot and I loved playing basketball, but with like 3 seconds left in our last scrimmage and I was a starter before the season started, I tore my anterior cruciate ligament. We were playing on a little bit of rubber over cement and, you know, my foot just stuck and my body turned and I heard it snap. And back then, I was in the hospital for a week, and I was in a full-length plaster cast from my toe to my hip for 7 weeks. And then I was able to start bending my knee, you know, 7 weeks later in a brace. And that just hurt to bend it after it had been straight so long. And your plebe or your freshman year there is hard enough anyway. And on top of being a female there and everything else, that was a really, really, really hard time. And I just, I don't know. I asked my mom if I ever mentioned quitting and she said no. And when I was in high school, I used to, and I even read this poem at my graduation, when things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're traveling seems all uphill, when the funds are low and the debts are high, when you want to quit, you have to sigh. Rest if you, it says rest if you must, but don't you quit. And it talks about the silver lining, you know, and that's what kind of kept me going, I think. Then, you know, I've been through 3 divorces, so that's kind of a tough thing that I've been through, you know, not nasty divorces. I mean, like I mentioned to you before we started the podcast, I'm here taking care of my ex-husband who's got cancer. We divorced 20 years ago, but I'm helping him out with stage 4 kidney cancer, and my daughter and I are taking care of him. So I've been through some tough times, but fortunately with the divorces, I'm, you know, it's not been, they've all been pretty amicable divorces. But a couple of other things that I've dealt with, besides being a minority in a male-dominated work environment my whole career, which is, you know, a woman in that career, is, you know, it's pretty challenging. My son, who's 26, he's been on my podcast. He, this month, is 3 years sober from drugs and alcohol. And I knew it was bad. I don't think I realized how bad it was. It had gotten where when he finally went and sought help himself 3 years ago, his blood alcohol was 0.39. He should have been dead. And he was still, he was alive and functioning and going through like detox. So that was a really hard time in my life, 10 years from about age 13 to 23. And we talked about it in that episode. Just because I started to really learn that I couldn't fix him. And so it was really hard to realize that there was nothing, very little that I could do to get him better. He had to want to get better. And what helped me through that was I worked with some other parents that were going through something similar, and we formed a group called Parents Affected by Addiction, and we helped other parents through that. You know, do I kick them out? Do I let them? Do I give them money? Do I just give them food? You know, what should I do? How do I handle this situation? And that was a really tough time with him. And then another instance that I've been through that's been very challenging is my daughter has several invisible illnesses that you can't see. She looks fine. She looks healthy, but she's pretty sick, and she never complains. I want to record an episode about some of her invisible illnesses with her and talk about it, and she wants to do the same. And she also has really bad anxiety. We did an episode on that, so I'm fortunate I'm really close to my kids. But those are some challenging things that I've been through, and that's why I feel like I've learned a lot that I can hopefully share with other people.
Right. Is there, you know, a generational addiction and mental health thing you're aware of in your family, or?
For my son, I could see from an early age that he had addict tendencies. For example, when he got Pokemon cards, he always needed the next pack of he needed another pack because he knew it would have a rare card in it. And you could just see those tendencies. He also, when he went to counseling, when I got divorced from his dad, the one who's sick now, when he went to counseling, the counselor, when he was like 7, you know, would just play games with him like Sorry. And William was always changing the rules of the game so that he could win. And I'd tell him, well, you can't change the rules of the game in life. You have to, you know, so he even said in the episode, sometimes he thought he was above the law. He started to show those tendencies, and my grandfather and his dad drank too much, probably an alcoholic. And then his dad's dad was an alcoholic, and his dad's mom passed away in the gutter. So I think it kind of passed down, you know. And my daughter is not that way, but she's got her own own challenges with her illnesses. Just I'll just name them: Ehlers Danlos syndrome. You can maybe provide some links if you wanted to, if you do show notes. Ehlers Danlos syndrome, long QT, MALS, and POTS. POTS is like her blood pools in her feet. So if she gets up real quickly, she's dizzy. And it's an autonomic nervous system disorder. So you can't, we've been to children's and everywhere so many times, you can't like take a pill for it. It's every part of that your autonomic nervous system controls is, you know, it's hard to control, like your body temperature or your gastrointestinal issues that you have. It's just different things like that she deals with.
Wow. Yeah. And then you have to parent in the most effective ways where there's sometimes there's natural consequences, and sometimes you're like, I think this one requires a huge mama bear hug, but I don't want to be enabling. I'm not sure.
It's hard. Yeah. You don't know what's enabling, what's not. I mean, you know, I started to really understand Anna, you know, because sometimes she'd lay on the couch a lot. I think, you know, come on, let's go do stuff. But thinking maybe she's lazy, but I don't know if you've heard of the spoon theory, which is a way to describe with to somebody who doesn't really understand, like, you know, you look healthy. What does it feel like to be you? Well, imagine that you have 12 spoons throughout your day. Well, for Anna, taking a shower in the morning is 4 spoons. Getting up is a spoon, and then fixing lunch or going out with your friends, or if you have homework, or if you have to go to work. Now, you might borrow a spoon. I've seen her borrow spoons, like, you know, go out late at night with friends, but then she pays for it 2 or 3 days straight. So she has to really think through how she spends her energy, and she has to rest a lot. So yeah, it's hard to know, you know, Anna, get up. Are you, you know, is she being lazy, or is she really just completely exhausted today? And we've lived, she's 23. We've lived together most of this time. So I've seen it in action, and I admire her for how she has learned to manage it. Now she makes her own doctor's appointments and stuff like that. So she's really learned to manage it. And, you know, when you're a teen, you think, you know, this isn't fair. And now she's adjusting. So I'm proud of her.
And you're like, every phase of parenting is a whole nother boot camp. It's actually the hardest thing. Parenting is the hardest thing. It's never predictable. And it has so many like somatic and relational and emotional facets. It's like a long sociological study on humanity. And mom's resilience.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. And then when you're a single parent and the father isn't involved, that it's even harder. It all falls on you. I feel like there's a lot that I can give back and help out other women. So, and then a lot of people come to me because it's like, well, Emily, how do you get so much done in the day? So, you know, that's one thing that I've started to offer is, you know, if someone keeps track of their time, that's something on my website. If someone keeps track of their time for like 2 weeks straight, we can analyze the time and figure out how they could be more efficient in their day and still get stuff done. Time to work out, time for yourself, time to meditate, time for your kids. It's hard, but it can be done. We all have the same amount of time in a day.
You might just have 24 spoons though.
I might. That's true. I might have 24, whereas somebody else only has 8 in a day.
Yeah. And they can't spend them quite as rapidly as you and bounce back. Yeah. So when you're doing your personal and life coaching with folks, are a lot of them coming with very desperate mental health situations, or?
I've just kind of started that because what happened is I retired in May, on May 31st. And then the next day I dropped 7. That's when my podcast was published, June 1st. So I dropped 7 episodes. I tried to take like 3 months off. So I've just started getting into my personal coaching business. In fact, if you go to my website, not every aspect of it is completely set up. So I'm starting to get meetings. One person that I meet with this week, you know, if you sign up for a complimentary intro call to see if we're a match, one person wrote, she can't come up with one thing where she needs help. I think she says, you know, she needs a lot of help. Her life's completely out of whack. Another person that I'm coaching is working in a male dominated work environment, and it's her first time. So she's, you know, wanting to get some tips on that. So I'm leading a retreat with a friend of mine in mid-November in Stanton, Virginia, which is where I live in the Shenandoah Valley. So that'll be my first time leading a retreat. We started small with like 6 or 7 people, but it's been pretty popular. So I might do that again in the spring. So I'm still kind of building that personal coaching business. And then my small business consulting business is picking up as well. So part of it is just balancing everything.
If you can reflect back on, you know, your long career, military, government, the time you've spent really trying to parent your kids in ways that were effective to them without enabling. And, you know, if you can kind of sum up all the times you've climbed out of something really hard, like what's a word or a phrase that would describe how you even got up in the morning?
Yeah, sometimes I couldn't get up in the morning, actually, you know, but for, you know, so there are definitely days when I couldn't get up in the morning. Like when my son got a felony for selling less than a gram of pot, you know, my his stepdad took him to the appointment with the attorney. So there's sometimes, just to be honest, that I had a hard time getting up in the morning.
So sometimes you knew your own limitation and you're like, I got to check out on this one.
Yeah. But what kept me going is my kids, is I saw, and I even said this at my graduation, I saw the potential in them that they didn't see. And they're starting to see it now. And so it's such a good feeling to see how my children have turned out. The integrity that they have, the confidence that they have, that's what's kept me going, I think. And me, I love myself. And just recognizing that, you know, when you have a bad day, when you can't get out of bed, remember what it's like to have a good day and know that that good day will come again.
Right, staying hopeful.
Mm-hmm. And just, I find exercise helps me a lot. I find when I don't exercise, I start to get down. So just even if I don't feel like it, I get up and go for a walk or something like that. And for the people that I've interviewed on my podcast, I've interviewed a couple of people that I know that were paralyzed and they've overcome that. One guy took him 18 years. He's walking with crutches, but he's walking. Another guy, you know, that guy was supposed to be a quadriplegic. Another friend of mine, my friend from college, her daughter got hurt at age 12 in a gymnastics accident, broke her neck. She's going to be in Japan next summer in the Paralympic cycling. So these people watching what they've overcome, it's like they said, you know, a lot of times when it's a physical disability or injury, people think it's the physicality piece of it. It's not. The hardest part is mental. They all say it's like 90% mental. So that's what I try to focus on and work on. And if those guys can do it, I can do it. So hearing their stories helps keep me positive.
Right? The brain is not only like sending messages for the body to do what it should do, but the brain is also malleable for you to talk to your brain and tell your body what to do. It's remarkable.
Yes. Rodney said he hurt his neck in a football injury when he was 15 and he was pissed off, you know, for the longest time. After about a year, you know, he said he noticed he was told he'd be a quadriplegic the rest of his life. And I know him because he works for the Navy and I used to work with him. As a civilian, but he one day he realized he could move his finger just like a quarter of an inch. So he set a goal, I'm gonna move my finger 200 times a day. And he just kept doing stuff like that. Now he's weightlifting, he's walking. It's just amazing to see. And it's mental, it's the mental aspect of it. And since I've retired, I've started doing more yoga and meditating. Both of those things help too. So yoga is more than exercise, but it took me a long time to get it.
I loved when you started sharing the poem. For as much of it as you can do off memory, will you just kind of close us with that? And then I will try not to even open my big mouth because I think it's so powerful. Will you just deliver the poem for us?
Don't Quit by Anonymous. When things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low and the debts are high, and you want to smile, but you have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit. Life is queer with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns, and many a failure turns about when he might have won had he stuck it out. Don't give up. Though the pace seems slow, you might succeed with another blow. Often the goal is nearer than it seems to a faint and faltering man. Often the struggler has given up when he might have captured the victor's cup. And he learned too late when the night slipped down how close he was to the golden crown. Success is failure turned inside out, the silver tint of the clouds of doubt. And you never can tell how close you are. It may be near when it seems afar. So stick to the fight when you're hardest hit. It's when things seem worst that you mustn't quit.
I love that. That is so, so good.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Emily.
The 2E Emerge podcast is brought to you by Emerge Mothers Academy. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave us a positive review. A special thanks to our media manager, Laurel Goulson, and to Jessica Manning for our music.